Welcome back to the Happy Market Research Podcast. I'm Alexandra and I'm here with Jamin.
Hey everybody.
So today we're talking about how to fail small. And this is a lesson that I learned from you before I joined the Happy Market Research Podcast. At my previous job, you were actually advising that company about a product they were working on and trying to bring to market. And it failed. It failed gloriously. And then from there, they were in the process of ideating, okay, well, what's the next thing that we can do? And you really taught us how to fail small. So tell me a little bit about what that means.
It's the difference between tripping and jumping off a cliff, right? I mean, it's mind-boggling how many companies I'm exposed to that are looking for hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, so that they can invest in technology, and they haven't even talked to a customer yet. They believe they completely understand the space, but they don't have any valid feedback, right? And so I always recommend to them that the first place they need to start is with traction. Know what the customer wants or what your assumption is that the customer wants, and then get feedback on that and document it. Like, they liked it. They liked it. They said they would buy it. They said they wouldn't buy it. This is why. This is why we're doing wrong, et cetera, et cetera. The more they can flesh that out and apply the innovator's sort of, you know, it's this innovator's economy, or it's lean startup at its core, which is this whole innovator's economy or accounting principle. That is simply, you know what your core assumptions are, and you're documenting them, and you're testing them over and over and over and over again, right? It's that feedback loop of the customer said this, I developed this, I then went to market with it, this is what happened. And then I ask the customer, and then it just continues on and on and on. And so in order to fail small, those have to be small steps that we take in the development process, as opposed to what I see more often, which is we're going to develop this thing, then we're going to take it to market and see what the customers think about it. 9 times out of 10, I don't see, maybe even 99 times out of 100 or even more, that just never works. So you want to think about your traction. Know what it is that you know that you believe you're going to solve, the problem you're going to solve, and then figure out how you're going to measure that customer adoption and have a really clear path that closes the loop on that feedback.
Yeah, being very, very aware of the fact that your assumptions are your point of weakness, that those need to be really closely tested and fleshed out before you move forward on any decisions.
It starts with cash. I mean, I'm just going to put it really plainly. This is an important point. This is probably the most important point of the podcast. You need to know that your company needs to generate more money than it's spending. It's just super simple, right? That's exactly what it needs to do. If you need $10,000 a month, then you need to make $10,000 a month at some point, right? And if you're an entrepreneur and you're like, okay, I'm going to develop the next Uber, you just might as well stop. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen at scale. There just aren't enough examples of that. Mm-hmm. Those are the unicorns. So don't put your eggs in that basket. Instead, start with a customer, recognize where the need is, address that need at a micro scale, keep it really simple, get some traction, get some customers that are saying they're willing to pay for it, and then move past it and get to cash. Get to the $1,000 a month, get to the $10,000 a month, whatever it is that you need to cover your overhead, get to that, and then continue to expand. There is in the current ecosystem of entrepreneurship, there is an addiction to venture capital where the entrepreneurs believe the problem they need to solve is access to capital. That is the wrong question. What they need to solve is a market need. And you can't do that at scale out the gate. You need to start small. As you do that, then you can expand and justify infusions of capital.
Yeah, it's almost like the capital is there is hiding the reality of whether or not you could make money in the
Absolutely.
First place.
Absolutely. It's a veil that people are happy to hide behind. And you're going to see a correction in the market. I mean, I'm not a genius by any means, or a fortune teller, even less so. There's no question. Everybody will tell you there is coming a day of reckoning for startups. And it's going to change. There's a lot of people that are looking, you know, entrepreneurs that are looking for jobs at that point. But if you are a data-driven entrepreneur, and you understand your market and you know what your assumptions are and you're testing those assumptions in the market, you will always have success.
The venture capital doesn't matter at that point. You're making your own money.
Because you're moving to cash. It's all about move to cash quick. Move to cash quick. And then people will be lined up to give you money. If you're making money, people like that.
That's the point of their investment.
That's right. That is the point of their investment. Now, but we've created this I don't understand the exact psychology behind it, unfortunately, but we have created an environment where it's almost like making cash is not as attractive as securing $1 million in funding, right? That's what we celebrate. Oh, congratulations, you have $10 million in funding. I'm like, oh my gosh, how much revenue do you have to help justify that investment, right? And so the psychology, unfortunately, it perpetuates this don't go to market mentality, because then you're going to justify a lesser valuation. And that's a big, I think it's going to be, it is something that will be, there will be a reckoning, it will be soon, and it will be catastrophic. But the data-driven entrepreneurs, at that point, their valuations will go up. Everybody's going to be happy with them. And I'll, you know, and talking quickly about my story, Jamie and I, when we started Decipher, April of 2000 to the end of 2001, we did $1 million in revenue our first year. It's crazy. Like, that was real revenue. That was with no startup capital. We had, by the end of the year, we had 8 employees, had our office space, everything was going great, right? Dot-com bust happened. We lost 93% of our business while he and I were driving together to a corporate retreat on strategy. That's so ironic, right?
Right.
It was like dot-com after dot-com after dot-com, just gone. But we had real product that was being consumed by, we were left with literally 2 clients out of the dozens that we had. One was Summation Research out of Cincinnati, and the other was Intuit, which is the makers of Quicken and QuickBooks. And so we retrenched. How do we add more value to those existing customers and go deeper? We did that. And within a year, we right-sided the company again. Of course, we had burned through all of our cash that we had made, but we're also growing at a faster clip than we were in 2000. So the point that I'm trying to make simply is, if we wouldn't have had a real product with real customers spending real money with us, then we would not have known if we had something or not, and we would have just gone out of business.
So what are some action steps that people can put into practice now, today, to start learning about what works and what doesn't? Let's say they already have that little cushion of venture capital. Obviously, they're not going to give that up. That's not what we're advising. But what can they do to start figuring out, okay, if I didn't have this venture capital, if this dries up or people don't want to give me Series A, Series B, what can they do to move their business forward in a real way?
Get to cash, right? So sell something. You know, what do you have right now that you can start monetizing? And how do you monetize it more? Whether it's deeper relationships, so move from basic to premium packages, or how do you get more basic packages? Like, how do you get more consumers to adopt it, right? That's the other, and pay for it. That's the other side of it. So you need to answer that question. The only way you can answer that question is through my market research, because that's where you are reaching out to the potential customers or existing customers, and you're talking to them, you're getting feedback. If it's at scale, you need to be doing surveys, right? It's really important. You need to be doing IDIs, in-depth interviews. Jamie, Kristen Luck, and myself, we're going to start a new division. This goes back 2012 or so. And so we conducted, we spent, I think it was about 50 grand, did a bunch of interviews, did a bunch of focus groups, and we came to the conclusion that our idea, while we believed it was a good idea, didn't have an easy product market fit, and the timing was bad. And so we decided not to pursue that. We lost whatever it was, tens of thousands of dollars, but we didn't lose millions of dollars. We didn't jeopardize the core business or brand by stepping out on what we thought was a no-brainer, you see. Mm-hmm. And so it's all about mitigating that risk and risking proportionate to how much you can lose, right? So I can go for a run and trip and I'll be okay, but if that trip ends me over a cliff, then it's catastrophic. And you don't want to put your business or yourself or your family in that situation.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting how fundamental the themes are that I think you're drawing out. And they seem like such no-brainers, but it's how many entrepreneurs are going out thinking about, I need to convince an investor to give me money rather than I need to convince my customer that what I'm offering is valuable. And that is just such the core of what business is supposed to do.
And you know, that's why I think you've seen a rise in solo entrepreneurs, because capital is easier to access. You know, when I started Decipher, I had literally 60 days of PTO that I'd saved up from my previous employer when I left. That was all I had. I didn't have this big bank that I was pulling from or rich parents or whatever. So, you know, Jamie joined me, thankfully, shortly after. He didn't have really any income expectations, and we already had some income coming in at that point. Arvin Andreessen, being the third leg of the stool of Decipher, came in as a partner, ownership stake in the organization, and everybody worked for free to get the work done. So in order to get Decipher off the ground, I had to beg my network, hey guys, who are talented in ways that I was not, am not, in order for them to be able to come to the table and give their value to build the company. And I think, you know, as an entrepreneur, if I'm focusing in on, oh, I got to get capital so I can hire people, as opposed to I've got to build my personal network to push to build this company. I think, you know, they're two very different strategies, and they don't have to happen exclusively. They can happen together, but the focus needs to be on that team.
So let's bring it back to market research. What does failing small look like in the context of market research of companies? If you're, you know, a researcher yourself, how do you apply this concept?
Yeah, I mean, market research is so well positioned at failing small that we are failing big, right? We're not big risk takers. We're not out there saying, okay, I need $1 million to go build this next thing, right? If you're an established market research company, you're just really trying to hold on to what you have and lose less of it. We're seeing such erosion in the tracking space right now. It's literally terrifying. Like, the landscape over the next 5 years is going to look so different on where market research dollars are being spent than where it does right now or where it did 5 years earlier, right? I mean, the smartphones have changed everything. Voice is going to change. More. Like, we don't have we are not seeing voice like we should see voice. So, you know, where I think market research risks right now is simply with a death grip holding on to the things that we've had to hold on, the things that have gotten us to where we are, as opposed to embracing the realities of the marketplace. Kodak being probably like the stand-up poster child of this. They owned all the patents. They were, you know, geolocation to phones, pictures, all this kind of stuff, right? They couldn't shift because film was the core business. So because of that, they wound up completely underwater, right? And so that's where I think, you know, the risk is right now in our space. We've got to be willing to say, yeah, I'm going to have to give up a significant part of my revenue because it's going to be given up anyway, and cannibalize that on these other, perhaps even less attractive, monetarily attractive options. But that's what's going to position us really, really strongly on the go forward.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of the Happy Market Research Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening with us, and we will chat with you guys tomorrow.